Welcome back to another episode of the Extra Features Movie Review Podcast. This is episode 276 on the countdown to 300. I'm Kevin.
I'm Sam Mendes, and happy birthday to everybody that shares my birthday.
I'm Daniel.
I'm Doug.
And I'm Pat.
Hi, Pat.
The passive-aggressive turtle.
Oh, he has been for years, so that's probably a perfect name for him. So, guys, what's been up? I mean, Doug, you had a big outing.
Yes, yes.
Doug, you were outed?
He was outed.
Well.
No, you had an outing. Oh, sorry.
Yes.
You had an outing.
Yeah, went to Red Bank, New Jersey to meet Kevin Smith for the premiere of Masters of the Universe Revelations. And I'll be honest, I haven't been a big fan of Kevin Smith's work recently. I thought Revelations is probably the best thing he's done in a while. And he was an awesome dude to meet in person. He was great to my kids. So,
did he call you brother?
No, but he did thank us for making the trip down to the store. So,
cool.
Well, okay. On you guys' recommendation, I will watch He-Man. I was going to maybe watch it. It was on my list of getting to. I will start tomorrow.
All right, we can discuss it after you do.
Yeah, I am definitely interested in it. I mean, I am watching Ted Lasso season two currently.
Me too.
Which I quite enjoying. I thought Loki almost killed me trying to finish that. And I did finish Kung Fu episode 13 today, so I'm caught up on that. That's just a terrible show. What have you been up to, Pat?
Nothing. Just planting stuff and falling down.
Guys, just so, because Pat doesn't, because he's passive aggressive, doesn't want to go too far into it. Pat had a fall the other day. We almost didn't have him today. So would you like to go into a little more depth, Pat?
I was cleaning out the backyard of all the trees and branches and stuff, and I was taking it through the breezeway. That's for Doug. That's, I don't know if you have breezeways in the U.S. Okay.
We do.
It might call different. I get out the second door, I trip on something, fall nearly, and I almost fell into the car, but I hit my leg. Thankfully, the pavement and the trees broke my fall, or I would have broken my leg, maybe, possibly.
Ouch.
And as Mr. Friend, would you like to talk about your big dilemma this week?
Oh, yeah. I was going to get a new computer this weekend, but before I could, my computer crashed on Thursday, so that's been a stressful weekend. I have a temporary computer right now, or at least my backup one, so that's what I'm zooming on currently. I'm leaving my file back, which blessed be, or whatever they say. Yeah, so crisis averted, but it was a bit of emotional rollercoaster.
We got one
and
last
here,
thing.
And,
Sorry, Daniel. We have one last thing Doug forgot to mention, and he thought I wasn't going to mention it. Doug, do you remember what we're going to talk about?
Yeah, I actually joined a gym 2 weeks ago, so trying to live that healthy life, trying to, you know, live long enough to see my son's movies when he makes them and they're on the big screen. So,
hey, I'm going to be in your son's. He's going to need some guy like me to take a pie in the face, fall down some stairs. I'm his man. I'm here.
All right.
I work for nothing. All you got to do is get me there and hang out with you. I'm totally willing to do it.
Okay.
Well, falling for nothing. I've just done that. So,
just so people know, there is a bet going on. If Doug lasts 1 month at the gym, I'm allowed to come and personally move his barbecue. So I just want everybody to know that. I don't know how I'm going to get into the States, but hopefully soon I can get in to move the barbecue.
Where are you going to move it to?
Well, down the breezeway, of course, and hopefully I don't fall.
I was going to say he'll move it back up to Canada. So.
Well, I kind of want it. I think it's a big barbecue. It's too big for Doug. And now he's going to be a skinny guy going to the gym. He doesn't need such a big barbecue. We're going to bring him a Canadian barbecue that he can grill a moose on.
I have two teenage sons, so So I need a big barbecue for
that. You need a Canadian moose barbecue. Okay. Like really big.
It's so basically an enclosure with fire on the floor. It's basically
an enclosure. It's like a fire pit. We're going to dig you a hole and cement it and just put a spit on it.
Because so a moose is about 8 feet tall.
You're going to spit on the barbecue?
Restaurant scale barbecue.
Well, nice. I figured Doug with his teenage sons are growing and, you know, he's going to the gym. He's going to need more protein.
Need a lot of red meat. Yeah.
And me and Daniel have decided to go dig Doug a fire pit so he can have a Canadian barbecue.
Nice.
And we're going to bring him some Tim Hortons.
We gotcha.
Nice.
Because he needs a bag of Tim Hortons, which I have no idea why people drink it, but people love it in the States. And do they have Tim Hortons in Jersey?
Not in Jersey. I think closest would be like, upstate New York, like the Buffalo area.
Yeah, I know they have them on the border. I saw one somewhere in Detroit. I was outside of Detroit or somewhere around Detroit. I saw one. It shocked me. Somebody said, it's good Tim Hortons. No, I'm good. Thanks. I could go like every day on my way to work. So my question is before we start the show, guys.
Coffee beans.
Did he say something?
Yeah, I was just saying I could bring Tim Hortons coffee and you just barbecue them on his barbecue.
Roast them on a sheet, yes. Okay, what I was going to try to say, if you guys ever got into a director and you're like, there's a few films I haven't seen and I need to watch these films. For me, I only have like two Peter Jackson films left, like Meet the Feebles and Heavenly Creatures. I think the only two I haven't seen. And Wong Kar-wai, because Doug was nice enough to send me a Blu-ray of In the Mood for Love, which I still haven't watched because I have a reason. Because I want to watch them all in order. So now I'm going through every Wong Kar-wai movie because I feel I should watch these things. So do you guys have a director you feel you should film filmography? Or you guys just hodgepodge it? Daniel? Doug? I mean, Pat? No,
there's Kevin? Definitely directors. Like, I know I've seen all of Guillermo del Toro's films. He doesn't have that many, so that's kind of easy. I am working my way through all of Scorsese. I think there's like three or four I haven't seen yet, but yeah, I definitely do that. I go through a director's filmography and watch as many as I can.
Me too.
Yeah, I'm a bit more hodgepodge, probably. Like if I really like the director, I'll try to go with everything. But if there's a movie that like doesn't really appeal to me, it's like, okay, that'll just go to the bottom of the watch list. I get to finish the filmography eventually. Is that kind of attitude?
I have no idea what you just said.
Daniel, just so you know, all your sound's been garbled constantly. So it's getting a little hard to hear you.
Yeah. Okay. Should I try the other computer?
But you're recording on this computer, so I don't know what you're going to do.
Can you log in twice? Can we have two Daniel boxes?
Yeah, we could.
Yes, I think so.
Forgot. Doug, I have to ask you a question. I'll switch to that one. Doug?
Yes, sir?
Question. New Jersey, I forgot the name of it. Yes, there's a Comic-Con, sort of. It's it's in one of the towns in New Jersey, and I can't remember what it's called.
So you really didn't form a question there, did you?
Yes, I did. I wanted to know what the thing's called. That is a question.
Where Doug lived?
I'm not
Kevin
sure.
Either Kevin or Doug would probably know this. It's like almost like Rue Morgue or something like that. It's a...
He's talking about Chiller Con.
That's Chiller Con.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
He could have asked me, but he didn't want to ask me.
Well, that's fair. I live in the area, so.
He lives in the area.
Is it Trenton, New Jersey? I thought Chiller was in New York. Is it in Trenton, New Jersey?
I don't think it's Trenton. I think it's I think it's closer to Philly. I think it's like Cherry Hill. I think it's that area.
I get to edit all this out. I can't wait. This is going to be so exciting.
What's and we haven't even talked about Tomorrow War yet.
We're going to get there next. I'm just waiting for Daniel to get his sound fixed because all I hear is...
I thought he was trying to be the Vision.
I think he is the Vision.
Daniel.
I thought he was trying to be the chick in Superman 3.
That scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
Me too.
You like my Kylo Ren?
I do.
Yeah, it's pretty good. You can't tell, unfortunately, with the light, but his helmet glows. It ebbs and flows.
Is that a hot toy?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. God, I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
I actually ordered my first Sideshow figures ever last week.
Oh, yeah? What'd you get?
I ordered the Van Helsing and Dracula.
Those are beautiful.
From the Hammer films.
Those are stunning statues.
Yeah.
So we're back after a little bit of technical difficulties. So we'll just start on. So what's happening tomorrow, Daniel?
Oh, I think tomorrow war. I have to check my phone because I took a picture of the cast list from there. So it's directed by Chris McKay, written by Zach Dean, starring Chris Pratt, Yvonne Strahovski, J.K. Simmons, Betty Gilpin, Sam Richardson, Edward Hodge, Jasmine Matthews, and Mary Lynn Rapscob.
Yeah, like, why does Mary Lynn Rapscob ever work? Like, can somebody help me here?
Because she's like, awesome.
What casting director goes, hey, we need Chloe from 24. She's terribly an actress, miserable stand-up. We'll cast her anyway. That's always a good thing for me.
I like her.
I like seeing someone you wouldn't expect in a big action sci-fi movie.
Well, I'm always looking for Doug, but he's never there. I look for him every movie. No Doug.
Mike Mitchell was in this one. He's close enough to me.
That is true.
They cast as Barbecue, not actually Doug.
Oh, that's right. So I'm watching The Tomorrow War. I kind of like big action adventure movies. Always have since I was a kid. I don't know what I watched because I watched 40 minutes of Volcano Doc, which I thought was a little strange. I just found the beginning of this movie was driving me nuts. I'm like, can we get somewhere, please? And I knew as soon as that volcano thing came up, we were going back to the volcano. At some point, we were coming back to that discussion because that was kind of random. And then he goes home and starts talking. I'm like, I don't care anymore, Chris Pratt. I don't just get to what's going on. And then I find it by the 45-minute mark, it starts picking up. And then we go to the future. I'm like, okay, we're rocking. We'll have some gunfire. Maybe I'll like this film. All I see is a lot of guns and not hitting anything. And I'm like, wow, this graphics suck. These creatures are boring. They don't really do anything. They can't hit anything. They're not really killing much. And then when they caught the female, I'm like, okay, there we go. So I'm like, oh, then maybe something's going to happen. His daughter dies. I'm like, okay, he comes back. And then he's got to figure out what's going on. Oh, got to go find that volcano kid. All right, let's run over and talk to Volcano Kid for 10 minutes, which was kind of funny. And then we have to have a tie-in with his dad. I'm like, oh, God, I can't take any more of this. I think this thing just needed a rewrite and some editing fixes, and I think I might have liked it. I had a lot of issues with this. I thought it was okay, watchable, but should have been better.
I thought it was a really dumb premise for a film. I wasn't expecting much, and you know what? I didn't mind it. I didn't hate it. There are a lot of stupid things that happen in this movie. Nothing really makes sense. Oh, we've got a thing that will kill male aliens, but we're not going to use it. We're going to do something else. And then let's go to the, you know, I don't know. Just the whole premise was kind of wacky with the future wants people from the past who are going to die to come back and fight a war for them. And I didn't mind the aliens, to be honest. I thought they were pretty standard CGI aliens for 2021. Chris Pratt was okay. I actually thought the stuff with his father, I really jacked up J.K. Simmons or whatever. I liked it. I thought it was good. I mean, he jacked up for the role of Commissioner Gordon in the Justice League movie, so he was pretty buff at that time. So I didn't mind that.
Doug at 6 months, buff.
Mm-hmm.
Rio.
So the whole thing where they go and they figure out that the alien ship is somewhere in Siberia or wherever, and they go to take it down, and they have the virus that will kill the males, and they don't do anything with it. Instead, they choose to fight them one on one, and then it's like a rehash of the alien queen fight.
They did insert the virus thing inside the pod things that they were in, isn't that?
Did they?
Yeah,
I didn't remember them actually doing it because I remember
they were
them
needling them.
I think they put the little needle things in about four of the pods. They missed a few, though.
And then the other ones woke up, were like, "What the fuck is going on?"
Yeah. Okay. And then they have like a rehash of the alien queen fight from the end of Aliens, except in a snowstorm or a snow bank or whatever. So actually, you know what? It had a kind of a feel good sensibility. I think if I'd gone to see this in the theater, I would have been kind of like, you know, hell yeah, you know, kick that alien ass. But watching it on TV, I'm like, eh, it's okay. It's all right. I didn't hate it. So,
Bob, you want to?
Yeah, I have to agree with Kevin. I didn't hate it either, but it reminded me too much of like Alien, as you said. Boss level, Edge of Tomorrow, and Bliss. Like there was so many characteristics from those movies interspliced, and I just go and
hold on 1 second. I'll let you continue.
Oh gosh,
how did you get Bliss into this film? Is what I wanted to know.
They were going into another realm.
Okay, got it. Perfect. That's where you're going. That's okay. What I was asking.
And did I say Starship Troop? I have Starship Troopers as well because. Mm-hmm. Because the aliens and like fighting the aliens, it was like too similar to that.
This could have been a Starship Trooper 4, yes. No problem.
So I didn't hate it, but I just found too much similarities between other movies. I want something different. I guess going back in time to fight the going back into the future, There's another movie. It sort of like, but it just reminded me of too much. I'm done.
Okay. I think I like this more than you guys, I think. I like this high concept kind of sci-fi. I thought it was cool. I thought the Yvonne's character in that kind of twist was an interesting dynamic with Chris Pratt. And I liked how he was able to have good chemistry with Sam Richardson, good chemistry with Yvonne, good chemistry with Betty Gilpin, and then the whole bit with the J.K. Simmons. I thought it had a good structure, even though it was a bit long. And I liked how they had to figure it out in the past after the portal was shut down and just like, they're here the whole time. I thought that was kind of cool. And I liked the different scenic look to it. And I like Chris Pratt a lot. I think it's interesting how like 10 years ago, he probably would have been playing the Sam Richardson role. And I like seeing people you don't expect in these big sci-fi action movies being in them. So like Sam Richardson and Mary Lynn Raxgub, even though I kind of wanted more Sam Richardson, but at least we get it in a different film that we're discussing today. But I enjoyed it. I didn't love it, but didn't hate it either. And I thought I thought the creature design was pretty good. And I liked the little spike things so they could shoot out. I'm a simple man.
I had issues with this film, starting off with, first of all, as an American, I can say flat out, nobody is sitting around the television watching World Cup soccer in America. So that would not happen. I didn't understand why they chose that particular point in time to go back in time to. Why didn't they have another team of scientists trying to figure out where the aliens came from or when they landed and go back to that and just nuke it in space before it lands? There was just many story issues. I didn't know why they went in that direction. And the biggest sin for me is Sam Richardson. He had a great introduction, and then he disappears for like half the movie just to come back at the end. I wanted more of him. And speaking of Sam Richardson, how did he get caught up with J.K. Simmons and Chris Pratt in the snow at the end? He just shows up out of nowhere and lies down next to them. That was another head scratcher for me. But
comedic timing.
Didn't he go? He went in with them, and he and J.K. Simmons were stationed to watch the ship to prevent aliens from escaping.
And then he did chainsaw one in the head. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And but then Pratt and Simmons go off after the female, the queen, and then he just shows up out of nowhere at the end.
But I think they leave him with the one of the snow things.
Because he was rusting. He was rusting in that spot, and then he decided to go and rest with them at the end.
They actually say to him, "You wait here, and we're going to go take care of this." I think there actually is a line of dialogue where they say that. Yeah,
but I agree. I wanted more Sam Richardson, but I thought it was kind of an interesting idea. Like, I hid. Like when he was in the future, I was just like, like that. Now he wants to be your hero, so I kind of like that arc a lot.
Cool. Anyone else have anything to add?
Listen, guys, don't make any sudden moves.
Ooh, I like that transition.
Right.
No sudden move. Directed by Steven Soderbergh, written by Ed Solomon, starring Don Cheadle, Benicio del Toro, David Harbour, John Hamm, Brendan Fraser, Craig Mums Grant, Kieran Culkin, Noah Jupe, Julia Fox, and Amy Samets. What's up, Pat?
Pat, you're up.
I'd love to be up because I watched this movie, and by the end of it, they were talking about they had a little blurbs on it saying something about Chrysler, GM, and Ford. And I'm going, what does that have to do with the movie I just watched? Because I watched it and I didn't get it at all. I didn't get what they were trying to do. I didn't enjoy it. I'm going, what are they trying to do here? So please tell me.
I think they were blueprints for a muffler that eliminates energy transmissions, right? Or like just
lead.
Is better for the environment. And it was the four big car companies, Ford, GM.
Was I watching them for the same movie that you were?
It's a bit confusing at times, to be fair.
It was, because I'm getting, what was his name? Maybe was it Javier Bardem or somebody? And I'm going, and then by the end of it, I'm looking at that blur, but I'm going, what is this guy?
It was an engine that ran on unleaded gas, because lead in the gas was very harmful to humans at the time, and so they had to come up with unleaded gas and a new engine that ran on that, but the major companies didn't want to invest in brand new technology that would cost them lots of money, even though they knew it was hurting the public. So,
So
they were trying to keep that hidden.
Is this based on reality? Because this seems like something that could have happened.
Yes and no. It's the story of unleaded gas is real, but this heist thing is not.
Okay,
that's the part I was having trouble with, the heist. And I'm going, what has this got to do with what was at the end? Because I just got lost.
I think it's a Soderbergh film, so Soderbergh read an article on this and said, I have an idea. Let me do a heist film about this, and I'll just sort of tie it into this at the very end. I understand why you didn't understand it, Bob. It really was not explained during the movie. It kind of had to really follow it. And until Matt Damon magically shows up, you don't really know what's going on. And then you get the end, you're like, okay, I got what this is all about. Because I agree with you. It's never really explained.
Yeah.
Kind of laid out.
Well, because that way you're in the point of view of Don Cheadle and Benicio del Toro. They don't know.
They have no idea.
They have no idea what they're hired to steal or anything like that. So you're in with them. You know as much as they do. And I thought that was a pretty cool aspect of the film.
So did I. He hit it well. Mm-hmm. I got to say, I really felt this film did well on keeping things secret. Like, we had no idea. I thought we're getting, like, things just kept happening. Like, Don Cheadle at the end, the money transfers at the end, just stuff like this. Everything's just seemed to happen. And even when they went to David Harbour's house right at the beginning, I don't think we ever knew what was going on. We were literally hanging out with the gangsters the whole time and living through them. I mean, nothing was really explained to us. So we're just learning as they learn, which I thought was kind of neat. I kind of thought it was different. I kind of enjoyed not knowing everything until the very end. And the Matt Damon reveal, which I'm going to ruin if you're listening, was kind of a surprise to me. You know, and he's the only one that really knew what was going on.
I think Kieran Culkin knew too, but Don Cheadle took care of him.
Or he knew what Brendan Fraser let him in on. Like, that he was supposed to kill them all and then just go meet him. And then Brendan Fraser was probably going to kill him.
Probably.
Brendan Fraser needs to go back to the gym. That's where Brendan Fraser needs
I think
to go.
Holy crap. He gained the weight for a new Darren Aronofsky film called The Whale, where he plays a morbidly obese guy. And
he was huge.
I thought the same, and I was like, Mommy? Brendan Fraser, is that you?
I also heard
that he actually wrecked his body making like all those movies in the 90s. That he's not a trained stunt person, but he did as much of his stunts as he could, and that wrecked his body.
Yeah, he needed like spinal surgery or something, and like I didn't know if that was because of the weight he put on too, because that's for all the stunts he did, and then putting on that much weight must have been kind of a shock to his system, right?
Yeah, I just like the writing in this film. I really enjoyed the pacing. I thought it was a little slow at the beginning, but it picks up nicely halfway through and just starts to move. I like the whole secretary angle with David Harbour's having an affair with her at the same time. This whole heist is going down. I'm like, the film has so many plots going at once, and it just keeps hammering the big one through, which works, but he's got all these sub-things going. So I think this film works on so many levels. Soderbergh just continues to impress me with some of his films. He gets it.
And so many great actors, too. I mean, you have a lot of great character actors in this. Anytime you could have Don Cheadle in a movie, you put Don Cheadle in a movie. Him and Benicio del Toro together. Who else? John Hamm in his little role. At the end, I loved him at the end with Matt Damon. I think you miscounted. There's actually whatever extra money here for you.
And he gave his bribe too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just so many great character actors in this.
Yeah. I didn't fully understand all of it, but I feel like it's more of a vibe kind of movie. I like the neo-noir crime of it. And I was just willing to go with the flow as information came, as soon as they got phone calls, we got more information. And yeah, like you guys, I enjoyed learning as we went along. And usually I do like exposition dumps, but I found like this film found a very cool way to tell us the information, but only when necessary. And I love Soderbergh as like an innovator, like after he's done all those iPhone movies with Unsane and that High Flying Bird, I think it was on Netflix. And now he's kind of experimenting with this wide lens, which I thought was kind of disorienting at times. It has that fisheye look, which was a bit to get used to at times. But I like the aesthetic of it, even though I don't know if
we got to give Soderbergh credit just on the word you said, aesthetic. This man gets it in every film, whether I liked High Flying Bird or not, which I didn't really enjoy. But he's got a good aesthetics. He can shoot anything on different phones, different cameras, different lenses. He never ceases to amaze me. I will always watch a Soderbergh film just to see what he does.
Yeah, that's totally fair. See, he's one director I have to go through like and watch all of his films again to tie that back to a conversation from earlier that you brought up, Simon.
Thank you. Now, Daniel, are you having a summer of soul?
I've got soul so bad.
Okay. So have you like cleansed your soul? You feel better after the pandemic is somewhat alleviated, except in Doug's country, which is returning.
Yeah. Summer of the barbecue, I think.
Summer of the barbecue, that is correct.
Okay, so Summer of Soul, or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised, directed by Questlove, with Gladys Knight, Jesse Jackson, Sheila E., Chris Rock, Stevie Wonder, Lin-Manuel Miranda, and I'm sure a lot of That's other talking heads.
Tons of talking heads. Doug?
I love this. I've been trying to introduce my son, my youngest son, Dylan, to the music that like I grew up with. And some of this music is the music my mom would put on clean, like Stevie Wonder. And to have the fact that the movie opened with Stevie Wonder, closed with him, that was amazing. I love that. But I also love the talking heads of some of the people who went there when they were saying, you know, me and my friends, we were suit and tie guys. So we liked the Temptations, But then Sly and the Family Stone came on, and we stopped being suit and tie guys and got into the fight. I love stuff like that. And I think Questlove was probably the perfect person to direct this because he's such a music historian in his own right. Everybody's heard of Woodstock. Everybody's heard of Altamont. I never heard of this. And this happened the same summer as those concerts. And the fact that Questlove presented that and showed these concerts for what they were, it was amazing to me. I love the music. I love the message. I would highly recommend this.
Bob?
I have to agree with you, Doug, because I didn't hear about this until it was like on this podcast, but it was history of this type of music and the history of history at that time period. And I started watching it, and the music that I was listening to, I thought I would buy these CDs or albums or whatever. Just like listening to the music, I'm going, I can't remember the group, what it was, but it was before. Maybe it was the Temptations, but I was listening to it. I was just, I've got to buy this or like listen to it again because this was really good. Like, and it was like history of the time, and I just enjoyed it for what it was.
Well, I got to say, I was introduced to a whole different style of music. Like, obviously, I knew the Fifth Dimension. I knew
the Fifth Dimension Stone.
I know Nina Simone. Like, I knew a lot of this music, but I don't want to say taken aback. That's the wrong term. I would say surprised how much gospel music I heard and how much gospel music I enjoyed. Not really being a church person, not really know gospel music, but I was shocked how this festival really appealed to people that were into this and were into the gospel music and into the funk music and into the soul music and into everybody that came on there. And then I never saw any act that nobody seemed to be enjoying. I mean, obviously, some of them people knew a little bit better. Like, Sly and the Family Stone was huge. I know that. But I really like when people would say, hey, this was a black festival for black people. And we love this. And I thought that was really great that we were learning about a culture I didn't know anything about. I know nothing about Harlem from 1969. And I really like how the mayor came out and then he cut to the mayor seats and showed the mayor, everybody loved this mayor, which I had never heard of. And I thought that was interesting. And I like how he brought on the Fifth Dimension. I guess maybe the only two members are still left alive. I don't know if the other ones are or not. And how they got to see the footage. And they discussed it saying, hey, we're just happy to be there. And people were listening to our music. And the Fifth Dimension, I didn't realize, or I guess obviously there's five. I never thought of it, the Fifth Dimension, that there's five of them. But it's just interesting the way they sang and the way they moved and stuff like that. And I found each band to seem to have a different movement on stage. And it was weird. I'm like, again, I mean, from the gospel people did their way. They don't seem to move a lot, but the Fifth Dimension moving, Sly moves. So I don't see rock bands move more, but the gospel all just seem to be a choir oriented, very stagnant at times, but people were loving it. So what do I got to say? I mean, they were into it. And then I thought it was very interesting to discuss. People didn't want these released. They just go, I'm like, why not? Maybe it's just me being me. Like, let people watch this. It's just a concert. Was Nina Simone that powerful for them? Because, I mean, she does stay in a powerful mesh as Nina Simone. Like, there's no holding that woman back ever. So that kind of thing. I mean, some of the acts I would say, hey, not for me. But if I watch Woodstock, I feel the same way. That some of the acts aren't for me. But again, that's okay. I mean, I've been to numerous concerts and see some bands I don't like, some bands I love. But there's something there for everybody. So I'm really glad Disney spent the money to bring this to me. So I could actually enjoy this and see this and go, hey, kids, man, this is like Woodstock. I've seen Woodstock. You should watch this. I mean, some of these acts is maybe the only time they were ever on film for this time period. It's not like now everything's filmed. And I really found this very interesting documentary on something I knew nothing about. I never heard of this festival.
Neither
did I. And I mean, I don't know if it's still going today or when it ended, but I think it's
it was just a one-time thing.
It's just a one-time thing? Okay, well, who knows, right? I mean, Woodstock was pretty much, they did Woodstock twice, I think. It's not all they've ever done Woodstock. They revisited it years later. Three times.
I just got introduced to funk music a few years ago, and I loved it. So I can understand where you're coming from with that one.
So it's cool. You were alive in the 70s when funk was big. Yeah, it's just not something
But I never listened to it. Like, I never listened to it. I never listened to Kiss until, like, a few years ago. I was listening to, like, soft pop music at that point. But by the time the 2000, like, the last 5 years, I've been catching up on more types of music, different kinds.
Actually, but I'm wondering, I remember as a 70s kid, I don't remember hearing Sly and the Family Stone. Stevie Wonder, my parents would play. So I'm thinking maybe that radio stations, I remember as a kid, there were so many more options just playing music. I remember there used to be some really bad AM stations that play like Air Supply. And then right afterwards, they play the Mary Tyler Moore theme. And nothing would ever be too heavy for anybody. So that kind of thing. I mean, I don't really remember disco other than hearing the odd song.
I remember it, but I never listened to it.
I'm like an 80s kid, right? I mean, obviously I was alive in the 70s, but I listened to a lot of rock at that time because that's what my dad listened to. But it wasn't classic rock. It was actually rock of its time. I just happen to remember it.
Well, so go ahead. Maybe it's because of your age, right? What year were you born?
Me?
Yeah.
Or 71. You're 69.
71, yeah. So I'm 2 years older. I mean, Sly and the Family Stone, Cover of the Rolling Stone. You never heard that song before?
Is that them? See, I wouldn't know that was them.
Yeah, that was them. Like, I was born in 62, so I've gotten a whole 60 years worth of music to listen to.
You don't remember Disco Duck or the Bee Gees?
I do remember that. Disco Duck.
Or Star Wars and Other Intergalactic Funk?
No.
Actually, that one I don't know. Star Wars?
I don't know that song.
It's Star Wars, the Star Wars theme with like character noises and stuff like that, but it's funk.
Oh. I don't think I've ever heard it.
Yeah, you should Google it sometime. It's quite good.
I will.
What's it called?
It's called Star Wars Another Intergalactic Funk is the album, but it's the Star Wars theme with funk music, and then they have like R2-D2 and all sorts of stuff in it. Anyway.
I'm a 94 baby. Y'all are old.
Right.
Hey.
Just before we move on, I was just going to do something for the listeners. You mentioned it was Disney, but isn't it Hulu that this was on?
I found it on Disney Plus in Canada.
Oh, really? Okay. Maybe
it's Hulu in the States.
Oh, okay. Just for so the listeners know where to find it.
Well, that's great. You know, we also have these things called the interwebs.
Well, just so people can
type it in.
Yeah, just for the people.
What I'm saying is, Kevin's right. I probably should listen to more Sly and the Family Stone because I do like them. And I do have Spotify and I have a pool. So all I got to do is put on Sly and the Family Stone to get my pool and I'll hear it. But I have been trying to listen to new bands this summer. It's really been my goal. So next time I'm in the pool, I will play some Sly and the Family Stone and try it out. Hopefully that's before my ice storm comes again in September or something. And
if you freeze freeze your pool, we could almost turn it into the ice road.
We could. Oh, we could put Doug's barbecue on it.
The Ice Road, written and directed by Jonathan Hensley, starring Liam Neeson, Marcus Thomas, Lawrence Fishburne, Amber Midthunder, Colt McCallany, and Benjamin Walker.
You're up, Bryn.
Sure.
Did you see it?
Yes, I saw it. I wanted more from this movie. I am a fan of Liam Neeson. I like his mindless actioners. I love Nonstop, Run All Night, all those mid 2010s kinds of ones. This one, it moved at a glacial pace. I thought there was at least 15 minutes of just them trying to put it back together. It's like the big rig back together is like, I don't care how you do it. Just, you have a deadline here. Could you just keep going? And I thought it was very badly written when they just believed Benjamin Walker's character that, oh, she has a bone to pick with the Lawrence Fishburne's character. And they stop for like 45 minutes waiting on a call and they tie her up. I didn't think that was very good writing. it was an interesting idea for a movie. Like, basically, okay, what if we took Ice Road Truckers, but we just put Liam Neeson in it and put his kind of movie. But I wanted more of a survival thriller. Like, I wanted more from the structure. Like, I would have loved if it was like part survival thriller with the ice road going for the rescue mission. And I would have loved if there was more claustrophobia in the mine. Because I love any movie where someone's stranded underground, someone's stranded somewhere. And I just wanted more claustrophobia. Instead, we kind of get a weird mutiny. And some of the action sequences are good. And I got like some of the adventure with like that guy blowing up the thing. So there's a landfall or avalanche or whatever. So I thought some of that was cool, but it just felt like there was too many similar beats and they were kind of just doing the same thing over and over for nearly 2 hours. And I wanted to like it more and I didn't. Yeah, I like some movies, Simon.
Douglas?
I did not care for this film. I don't know why they had to put an action movie, a typical action movie with guns and bad guys, on top of the rescue effort movie. I think if they just concentrated on the rescue story, that would have been fine. That would have been exciting. It would have been tense. But no, at the end, they had to have bad guys on snow cats with machine guns. And that was just incredibly stupid to me. I didn't think any of the actors were particularly good in this movie. I know I've seen them all be good in other things, or most of them anyway. But I don't know. I didn't care for it, and they got rid of Lawrence Fishburne way too soon.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to know how many times in this film they show me the same sheet of ice. Because literally I'm like, have they ever moved? It looks like the same road. Oh, look, they're driving down the same road. Oh, look, same road again. Oh, look, the truck is stuck in the same road. I'm like, this is painful. And there was nothing going on in that mine. Just kill everybody earlier. We could have been done in 20 minutes. I mean, I didn't like Liam Neeson in it. I like Liam Neeson's sidekick brother who needed some money for a truck or something. I don't remember. Don't care.
Truck.
All these characters were awful. Nobody was even – like, the villains were bad. That company guy they had to get rid of, who cared? Like, literally, what was the point of me watching this for an hour 40? The effects were bad. I couldn't understand this movie half the time, the choices the characters were making. Oh, we got to get there. I got to save my brother. And then he gets there, and they're like, oh, sorry, your brother died. Okay, thanks. Like, really? Like, was there a real point to driving all this way? Was this ever supposed to be interesting?
Whose brother died? The girl's brother?
Yes.
No, he lived.
Oh, he lived?
It was Liam Neeson's brother that died. He got crushed by the truck. The truck and the fence.
Oh, now, fuck, I can't remember.
That brought on like too much Anton Yelchin PTSD for me. I don't know about anybody else. Oh. Just hearing about how he died and seeing that, I was like, you know what? I could have went without that little part.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm saying is, like, is Liam Neeson scraping the bottom of the barrel? Because I'm done. Like, I used to like Liam Neeson films. I kind of even let some of his earlier ones go when he's the doctor and he has some issues and he's in the hotel. I didn't mind it. It was kind of fun. But I'm like, Liam, can you please read your scripts? I mean, The Marksman to this? Utter garbage.
The one from last year wasn't bad. The one, I can't remember what it was called.
Oh, the one where he, like, the one where he,
when he was a cop, like, he's on the run from the cops, and he's getting framed by Jake Courtney for killing a cop.
Because he was trying to redeem himself so he could go out with the girl.
Yeah, that's Marksman.
He was a heist guy, and he was coming out of retirement, and he wanted to, Honest Thief.
That's it.
I didn't think that was bad. Yeah. It takes 5 minutes to think of the movie name, but I thought that was okay.
He's controversial now.
That's why.
He can't be too picky right now because of all his, you know, racist interviews where he said he wanted to go beat up black people.
He was mad. I got that. He was upset. I'm not agreeing with it. Not agreeing with what he said. Sometimes you got to keep stuff to yourself.
So that totally makes sense why his character is so ready to hog tie the native woman in this movie.
Yes.
Okay. That checks out, Neeson.
Let's just say I'm done with Liam Neeson. The next film better be good or he's joined the Bruce Willis's I'm done list. But it gets a theatrical release. I'm going to have to watch it because Bob says I have to watch everything in theaters.
Wasn't this on Amazon? Technically?
Yeah, according to what the thing is, I think it's Cinema Blend. Okay. And they told me it was on Netflix. So I'm looking for it. I'm like, it's not on Netflix. Ice Road, nothing pops up. So I did find it, but it was on the wrong.
It's on Netflix in the States. That's where I found it.
I found it someplace weird, like Amazon or something. I can't remember. Maybe I had to rent it.
You're off the hook. Cinema Blend.
But I could. Okay, you are. But it was driving me nuts because I couldn't find this film on Netflix. Oh, so it's on Netflix in the States, not in Canada. So they just don't like me.
They probably said this the same for the Paper Tigers, N.A.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yes, I still haven't watched Paper Tigers, by the way.
Hold it.
Daniel, I hear a scrap. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, I have to agree with all three of you on your points, but like combining all the points because like the best scene of the movie that I felt was them like driving on the ice like that was like the great I lost my train of thought there. The stunt work of the truck like on the ice, I thought that was really good. But the rest of the movie, like it could have been shortened. And you're right, Liam Neeson has to pick something better because, like, I've seen another of his movies, and I'm going.
Sorry, you broke off for me. Go on.
That movie's coming up on later, so we'll discuss that when it comes up. Also, but as you said, The Honest Thief was good, Daniel. Yeah. So.
Does the villain, like Benjamin Walker, he makes me think of a really boring version of Pedro Pascal.
I find Pedro Pascal pretty boring so far. So, I mean, look at the Mandalorian. I'm like, he's in a suit. He's speaking good Jon Favreau writing. I'll let it go. But I watched him in 1984, Wonder Woman. I'm like, he's got work to do for me. I'm not saying he's bad. I need some work done. So, Daniel, I'm out the other night walking around with my imaginary dog, and I hear a howling of some kind.
Ooh.
So,
Pat is turning into a werewolf within. I don't know where you were going. I think we were going the same way. The Werewolves Within, directed by Josh Rubin, written by Mishna Wolf, which is a funny coincidence, starring Sam Richardson, Milana Vayntrub, George Basil, Sarah Burns, Catherine Curtin, Michael Chernus, Wayne Duvall, Harvey Guillen, Cheyenne Jackson, Michaela Watkins, and Glenn Fleshler.
Yeah, a bunch of people I couldn't give crap, but thanks, Daniel, for that big, long, boring list.
I got you, man. I'll start
here because Doug's going to rip me apart, so I'm just going to let it go right now so I get my words out. I did not enjoy this in any way. I tried hard to like this film. I liked the setup. I thought it was kind of quirky at the beginning, had some quirky characters. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get through this. I'm going to like this. I have faith. It's going to improve. I couldn't get into it. I tried to get into it. I did have kind of fun trying to figure out who the werewolf was, which I will not ruin. Somebody wants to, go ahead. I couldn't get through this, Doug. I thought the male joke was great. I thought some of the jokes were solid, but they didn't do anything for me. I never found them funny. I liked them, but I never thought they were great. Does that make sense? I really think this should have been a TV show. Or maybe a three or four part miniseries. I think it might work better for me. Because, I mean, I just couldn't get into it. I tried hard. And then at one point, I just got bored with it. And by the end, I didn't care what happened to them. I wanted them all eaten by the werewolf.
Oh, no.
So I gave it a terrible score because I just could not get into this. Mm. I don't know if it's the writing or the characters. It just never gels for me. I just felt it was a bunch of ideas that never came together as one. I'm done. Feel free to rip me apart.
Wait, do you like it better than Wolf of Snow Hollow? Because I know you had despised that one.
Yes, I gave this a 2. I gave that a 1.
Oof. Ouch. I I like this movie a lot, actually. I like that it's I like the structure, and apparently the way for a good video game adaptation is to have a very loose source material where they could have done anything with it, and they did, because it's based on a VR game where it's pretty much game of Werewolf where they have to guess who it is, and so it kind of works in a way of just a clue murder mystery. I like I like how it's just one night or a couple nights, and then mainly one night, and everyone's like, fuck this, we want to live. Then they just don't go all their own way. I thought that was fun. I remember liking a lot of the jokes. I think I watched this early last month, so I can't remember a lot of the jokes, but I liked the horror. I liked the writing. I really liked Sam Richardson. I like him a lot, and I think his shtick is good enough for a charming lead. And I think he works well in supporting roles. And I think if he gets the right character, he can work well with the lead, with especially with like him just being too kind to ever want to kill.
He's Doug. That's why Doug likes his film. It's Doug in the lead.
Well, thank you.
I'm not that nice.
Thank you thank you for starring in this film, Doug, and bringing us a good one.
Oh no, I agree with Daniel. I thought this movie was fun from beginning to end. I think what I liked about it was the characters. The characters were different from other films of this nature. And I liked that Sam Richardson and Melania, or I'm going to butcher her name, Milana Weintraub. I liked the two of them a lot. I thought they had great chemistry together. I just love that eventually by the end, the danger wasn't necessarily the werewolf. It was each other. They started killing each other, and it wasn't the werewolf doing it. And the whole running gag about the snowshoes, I liked that. It was charming. It was a charming werewolf movie, and I had a blast with it.
I love that mistrust is the villain. With like any good game of any good game of werewolf would be.
Sounds like us, Daniel. Mistrust.
Exactly.
And the stoner, when the one guy was attacked in the hotel, and somebody get my arm, and the stoner's like, I got you, bro. After we saw the movie, my kids and I were quoting that for like a week.
Of course.
Just, hey, could somebody get me like something from the kitchen? Yeah, I got you, bro. You know, it's fun.
I'm remembering one funny line when the Guillermo was like, can you spell animal or something? I don't know. I like this movie. And I think Michaela Walken should be in more stuff.
Yes.
She's good. Doug, did you see this?
Yes, I got to agree with you and Doug on this one. At first, I was not getting, I was not into it, but then I started getting the jokes, and because Sam Richardson was in Laurel War at the same time. And it reminded me of American Werewolf in London for the special effects. What do you mean, no? What?
See, you didn't like it until you heard that Simon didn't.
No. I started to not like it because it wasn't exactly my type of movie, and then it might have taken me longer to figure out who was the werewolf. But it took me somewhere between halfway and three quarters, and I'm going, oh yeah, that's who it is. But I did enjoy it because of the special effect, and the person turning into the werewolf. They showed the like how. Special effects of them turning into the werewolf. And I don't know. I like, as the jokes went on, I thought this was good. And I started liking it more.
Yay.
Yay.
Yay for all three of you. Here's a cookie on the way.
What type of cookie?
is it a pink greens cookie?
Does the cookie come for us?
The cookie is coming for you tonight.
Okay. Did you have a better transition, Simon?
I probably did, yes. Okay. But it's all right.
But that's okay.
We can have the cookie transition. Yeah. Kevin is here, people, but he just doesn't like movies, so he's not watching them.
I'm working a lot. I was working while you guys were talking. So
I noticed.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how you're on the phone or something, I think.
Yeah, big question. Okay. Because I go to a lot of conventions in the States, obviously, and we've got one coming up. So a big question was, what happens if one of our group goes down and gets COVID? How is that handled? So we're seeing.
I was going to ask you about the one here, like if there's a limit on the amount of people that they're going to allow in the convention center.
There is. It's 25,000 is the cap for Toronto.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that answers that question.
Yeah, but there's no cap, I think, in Florida.
Okay.
You look like a... You're so shiny, Kevin. You kind of look like a twilight.
Well, you know what it is? It's because I have all of these monitors in front of me.
Oh, okay.
You're
sparkling. Are you a vampire?
Yes, I live underground most of the time.
Okay. Yeah. If you're a vampire, the night comes for us, I suppose. again, into our next film, The Night Comes for Us, written and directed by Timo Tajanto, starring Iko Uwais, Joe Taslim, Julie Estelle, Hannah Al-Rashid,
I don't know if Zach Lee, my setup.
And Sunny Pang.
No, probably not. It's just like monitors.
Just more shiny. Shiny.
Sorry, Simon.
Oh, well, on a line.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Bob.
Yeah. Here. There was another line in there, but I was...
We're going to start this all over. Daniel, do another transition. So I'm going to edit this all out in one shot.
There's like four transitions in there.
I know. Well, you're going to have to start over because you guys keep talking about random shit and I have to edit this.
Are you telling us that...
Life is so frustrating.
God fucking damn.
Oh, of course I mean.
Oh, no. Are you telling us that the night comes for us, Simon?
I'm telling you, I'm going to come over the screen and personally visit every one of you. And two of you are easy to get to. The third one will take me a day. And the fourth one, I'm on my way.
What was the transition?
I'll make it hard for you to get up to me. I'll put tree branches in the way. I got a lot left.
You're going
to
fall over them anyway. I don't need to worry about that.
There's six seats between me and Simon.
Oh, that's really good, Doug. We're doing that one. Written in, The Night Comes for Us, written and directed by Timo Tajanto, starring Iko. God damn it.
Bob, shut up. Thank you. Go ahead.
Kevin got his wish.
Kevin's killing me.
Okay, The Night Comes for Us, written and directed by Timo Tajanto, starring Iko Uwais, Joel Taslim, Julie Estelle, Hannah Al-Rashid, Zach Lee, and Sunny Pang. I got through it.
Okay. We got through it. Never mind. I'm going to start this movie before I go off topic. This film is excellent. This is what I want in an action film. This is what I always look for. I think the butcher scene is phenomenal. I think the apartment scene is just incredible. This movie doesn't let you breathe for a minute and just go, 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 go. I think these Indonesian action films, Raid, this and that, are just phenomenal things. I just cannot get enough of them. I enjoy the hyper-violence. I wish they would get more recognition in North America, and I wish these people would become bigger stars than they already are.
Yeah, go ahead, Doug.
I was going to say, I watched this first thing this morning. I got up, took my dogs out, made my cup of coffee, sat down and watched The Night Comes for Us. Oh my God, is this movie excessively violent? And I loved every single second of it. There were times that I was in pain watching this movie. The two big ones are the hook that gets caught in a guy's groin, and then when Iko kicks the metal stud holding up the building, I don't know how he did not break his shin doing that. I would love to have seen a behind the scenes thing of that, see if they used like rubber. Is it a rubber thing or something? But when he kicks that, oh my God, was that painful to watch. And it was just a quick second thing. this movie was amazing. I loved every second of it. And I heard the director wants to make a trilogy because we only saw two of the six C's in this movie. So there's still four more that we could be introduced to.
Ooh.
Bob, for a differing opinion, because I know you didn't like this film, what did you think?
Pat. You're muted, Pat.
Pat, you're going to unmute yourself. Yeah.
Okay, I did not, but there are scenes where I really enjoyed it. The butcher scene, as you said, was good. The choreography of that of whatever was in the butcher shop being used. They used the bones from the guy and stabbed him with it. They used the meat hook, but other than that, it's just going on and on like nonstop. Well, it was good, like fighting, and the two women were fighting it, and all of a sudden. She holds up her hand and rips. I guess the knife went through it, but she takes this off. And she doesn't even wince when she's doing it, but just rips off the finger and tosses it away. I'm like, that was good. That's all I have to say. Other than that, I'm going, nah.
That's too violent for you? Is that what the issue is here?
I'm sort of used to that, but it's like not my usual type of movie.
Oh, I get that. This is totally up my alley. This is the kind of film I love.
Yeah, I'll go on. I love The Raid. I love The Raid 2. I've seen a couple of other... I know I saw Timo, the director's film, Headshot, back in 2016. So if you haven't seen that one, Simon, you'd probably enjoy it too. One called Headshot. And there was one on Netflix called Triple Threat, which was okay. But it has some of the same, similar violence. But anyway, about The Night Comes for Us, I love excessive violence. I was watching this and I was remembering, like, thank you, Indonesia, for making films like this. Because it's just, it's gory, it's cringy. Like, I think my part where I was like, was when Julia Stahl put the knife in the one of the Kill Bill kind of women's, like, arms and just took the vein, and it's like that just ripped through it. That was insane. Great choreography. And when at one point there was kind of like we thought Iwe's died, and I was like, no, he can't be dead, because they have to have at least a 5-minute fight at the very end of the movie. And I was like, okay, well, at least that's still possible at the end. And just all the choreography, all the violence is great. And I think if you like world building, I think the violence in The Raid and The Raid 2 are better. But I think, at least compared to the first Raid film, this has better world building.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. I think the world building is here. And I got to give you guys a quick story. I only met Julia Stahl because of the intern told me she was coming to the film festival, and I went to meet her at midnight, and the film was this movie. This is the movie I met Julia Stahl for, and she's super nice and tiny. I like these films. I really think these films just don't get enough promotion in North America in any way. I mean, I'm glad Netflix built this up, but they don't have the Raid films on, because I was talking to a friend of mine tonight, and I'm like, you should see The Raid. He's like, well, do you have a copy? I said, actually, I don't. It's kind of weird. It's actually a film, The Raid, I would actually have on my shelf, because I would watch those over and over again, because I just love Raid 2. I think it's got the best action scene I've ever seen in a film. And I just want to touch on here again, I really wish the Oscars had a stuntman category.
Yeah.
I really think it deserves its own category. I mean, we have stuff for set design and sound mixing and this. Why is not stunts recognized? I mean, you see some amazing stuff in Mission Impossible and this and that. They can say, well, it's green screen. I said, well, if it's green screen, then it doesn't count as a stunt. This mostly looks practical to me, most of the action.
Yeah.
And you also see, I can't remember his name. Doug, it's the same guy in this in Snake Eyes, or is that the guy for The Raid only?
No, Ico is in Snake Eyes. He plays the guy who trained Snake Eyes.
Yeah. He's amazing. That's what I thought. It's the same guy. He's just freaking phenomenal in everything the guy does. He's the best part of Snake Eyes. Yeah, his one scene is amazing.
He needs better, like, because he's the only, like, actor in here that American audiences probably recognize, because he's been in Mile 22 and Stuber. And it's just like, okay, if we're going to bring Iko Uwais to American audiences, we need to give him better movies.
He's on his way. Yes.
Yeah.
He's on his way.
Give him a better character, I think.
Well, maybe, hopefully, it won't be in a movie that's way too long and they sit all day in a sub and don't do much. Like, not like a submarine sandwich, like an actual sub.
Yeah, and the boredom could make you a widowmaker almost.
Yeah, I think it did. My wife left me.
No. K-19, The Widowmaker, directed by Catherine Bigelow, screenplay by Christopher Kyle, story by Louise Naura, starring Harrison Ford, Liam Neeson, Sam Spruill, Christian Camargo, Tim Woodward, and Sean Benson.
So I will start here. The reason why I picked this film, because it's my list, so everybody knows, this is the last Catherine Bigelow film I hadn't seen. And I don't know, it just never interests me to watch it. I'm not really a big Harrison Ford fan, other than Star Wars. I've never, in Indy, I'm not going to rush out and see a Harrison Ford film. Just, I don't really care. And I'm sitting there going, oh, look, there's Liam Neeson. Isn't that nice? And I just found this film went nowhere fast and kept going nowhere. It literally just went nowhere. If I have to see another shot of a submarine again, I'm going to fall asleep. I'm literally like, why is this film 2 hours and 15 minutes? There's no point to it. It's literally like I've seen better films with subs. I found nobody interesting in this film. I've never seen so many dropped accents in my life from the lead characters. Like, literally, you're watching the film and Harrison Ford starts off with this Russian accent and then it's gone. Liam Neeson falls suit. They're just like, what? And then the rest of the actors, I think, just gave up too doing the Russian accents. And I watch Bigelow and I don't see any Bigelow in this film. I think literally she just said, I'm doing this for the cash and I'm done. Like, I don't see any of her traits in here. I don't see any of her shooting style. I want to know if she was literally like a last minute replacement for this film or something. Somebody drop out. Because it just doesn't feel like it should be in her filmography at all. I think this film is terrible, boring, and there's much better sub-movies to watch. And then we got the end scroll. I'm like, okay, so it's based on a true story. I still don't care. Didn't like it. Intern?
I'm going to have to agree with you. I didn't get lost. I was listening to the accents. So I'm going, okay, this is not bad. And then both Liam Neeson and Harrison Ford dropped their accents, and they lost, and the movie lost me right there. I read a little blurb on the movie. The survivors of the real sub were complaining about the movie to somebody, and because it was based on a true story, right?
Yes, I think so. I kind of got that impression by the end.
When they lost their accents, they lost me on the movie. I thought, well, this it would have been okay. It would have been an okay movie. I've never seen it. How old is it? 2002 or something? And I have never watched it until now. And it just lost me. So I'm going, yeah.
It was filmed in Toronto. And I remember they were in town. And I was looking for Harrison Ford. Never saw him. And I was hanging out with Kevin at some bar right near the hotel he was staying at. And I can't remember. Somewhere on Bedford. And it wasn't the Bedford Ballroom, but it was in that area. I was drinking with Kevin, and I cannot remember the name of the bar.
The Duke of York?
No. We were further down. We were downtown somewhere, and it was like on a weird side street. Who knows?
A submarine? Bedford would be Duke of York or Bedford Academy, but they're not anywhere near the convention center.
No. That's right. Maybe with their Bedford Academy.
Oh, yeah,
Academy.
The Duke of York remember. Near the Bachter Eye Institute, isn't it?
Okay, yes. Then it's probably the Duke of York. It definitely wasn't Bedford because I was drinking zombies.
Little Toronto bars for our listeners.
Not that it doesn't really matter. Go on, Doug. Continue.
I got to agree with you guys. This movie didn't really hit anything for me. Liam Neeson was okay. I thought he was a little bit better than Harrison Ford. But like you said, the dropped accents kind of took me out of the film. I don't know. It just, I've seen better sub movies, Das Boot comes to mind.
That's the best suburb.
Yeah. But there was just something about this that, like you said, it felt rote. It felt like Catherine Bigelow was in there just for the money. The one scene that maybe had a little bit of tension for me was at the very beginning when the doctor is running, saying, you know, they have the wrong medicine or whatever. And then he gets run over by a truck. aside from that, I mean, even the moment where the one guy refused to go back into the sub and they were going to submerge anyway, I felt no tension in that because I didn't know who that character was. I didn't have any feelings for him at all. That's kind of the way I felt about all the characters, including Harrison Ford and Liam Neeson, who you spend the most time with.
Okay. Now, I didn't – I'll just give me 30 seconds, Simon. I didn't see it because I got through – I got 15 minutes in, and then they dropped the accents, and I was like, you know what? If they don't care, I don't care. I'm going to come back to it another day, and I'd rather see Das Boot. Like, Das Boot has been my watchlist forever. I'd rather see – a great submarine movie before watching a mediocre one, to be honest.
Or Hunt for Red October. That's another good submarine movie.
Okay. We'll make a assignment despite you. I'm going to make a whole list of submarine movies.
I've seen them all. Okay. Kevin, you saw this years ago. Do you have anything to
years ago. Boring. You know, Harrison Ford is usually kind of dry. And I didn't like him in this film.
Okay.
Yeah. No real now, thoughts otherwise.
Before we get to the next movie on the list, I'm going to apologize for people for adding this movie to my list because it was just the next movie on the list. So, guys, we all need to attack this round just so everybody knows.
Oh, Monsters Attack. Directed by Ichiro Honda, written by Shinichi Sekiwaza, starring Kenji Sahara, Hideo Yamamoto, which it looks like Hideo Yamamoto and Godzilla is the cast.
I'm going to start being the biggest Godzilla, and I think Doug's probably just as big as I am. What the hell happened to Godzilla? I didn't know I was watching the Teletubbies of Godzilla movies. This thing was friggin' painful. Like, this kid's getting picked on by bullies and has, like, a fever dream and takes me to Monster Island when he gets to hang out with Little Godzilla and teach Little Godzilla to be better. And then I'm just like, what? And then these random guys show up, the cops show up about some car burglary. Like, what the hell? And then the Godzilla action is very little at best. It's mainly about this little kid and his self-esteem issues to try to beat up the bullies. This was one of the most painful Godzilla films I've ever seen. It's probably the worst one I've ever seen. I want that Son of Godzilla smoked by Mothra any week now. Would be great. I don't understand why this would even come out. Like, Godzilla, the first one, is like this big, gigantic horror movie. Even the second one is excellent. And then we get some idiot introduced Son of Godzilla, and then it becomes like a children's film?
Like, well, to make things even worse, all the Godzilla footage was scenes from other movies.
Yes.
They just took scenes from other films and put it into this one. I mean, this is probably my least favorite Godzilla movie ever. But I actually read about it that the director, who was also the director of the original Godzilla film, he loved this one. He thought it spoke to important issues about self-esteem and bullying, and I get where he's coming from. I just don't see it myself. I think this movie is pretty awful.
Is this one of those like grief allegory kind of movies like a Monster Calls, or not really?
No.
I wouldn't even say that. It's a young kid who needs to learn to stand up for himself. And he does that by watching Godzilla's son get bullied by big monsters. And Godzilla teaches him to breathe fire. So now this boy can breathe fire when he's bullied, I guess. Well, metaphorically, of course.
Metaphorically, but literally. Oh, I didn't see it. I was just asking.
I saw it.
Pat.
I saw both the Japanese version and the English version. Simon gave me both side by side.
Did it get better?
No, it got worse. I watched the Japanese version first, and then I've got, no, I'll watch the English version. It didn't get any better. I started hearing Son of Godzilla with an actual voice talking to the kid, and I'm going, oh, Simon, what did you do to me?
Sorry.
No, you're not. No, you're not.
Yes, I am, because I had to watch
it. This, like, he was, the kid is having a daydream because of this, he's getting bullied by this other guy, and there's a monster representing the bully, and I'm going, okay. And then all of a sudden you get these like two robbers, and I'm going, what's he going to do with that? And I just gave, I watched it the entire way through, and I'm going, but I like with the puff of smoke that the Son of Godzilla, like Godzilla at least has the fire going out. The Son of Godzilla, poof, it looks like a smoke ring. I'm going,
okay. Painful. But good news, we still haven't met Mechagodzilla or Biogantic Godzilla, which is probably one of my favorite ones. When he's in the swamp. I like the swamp one because my fairies come back. I miss my fairies. By Kevin's rolling his eyes going, Simon and his fairies.
Oh, the fairies in the box, right?
Yes, I love the fairies in the box. So. Yeah. I guess that's it. We have Doug's list up next.
I did see this movie years ago.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. And it's kind of like the, you remember Three's Company when like Lucille Ball showed up and gave like the greatest hits? This is kind of like that for the
Lucille Ball showed up on Three's Company?
Yeah. There's a, no they would way. Do these, yeah. They would do these episodes where it would be like, a celebrity or something would happen and they would go, do you remember that time? And they would go back to
it. Oh, I probably skipped them because I hate those things. I hate clip shows.
The Three's Company one was Lucille Ball. And she came in and went on about how much she loved the show.
She must have needed some cash.
Probably. You know, someone has to pay for the booze bills. But yeah, anyway. This is kind of like that. And, of course, Godzuki, I'll never forget Godzuki. He's the creature of my nightmares.
So. Well, hopefully number 11 in the franchise will be better. So next list is up as Doug, as I stated before. And I think we're finally out of here. So
what did
if
we
they
buy?
Make it.
Wait, what did we buy?
Go ahead. I don't know what you bought. I bought nothing. I'm not going to leave the house. Actually, yeah.
You didn't buy anything? Anybody else buy anything?
I bought the entire season, a series of Friends. I bought Batman Part 1 Long Halloween. I bought, I forget what it is. There was two more. I guess I'll have to.
Did you get a code for that Batman one?
I'll look. I don't think I did, but I'll look.
Okay.
And I think I'm not sure.
Go ahead.
I forgot what else I bought.
So there was a Criterion sale on iTunes. So I bought a bunch of movies. I bought.
Hold on. You got to tell them the story of us talking on the phone, talking about these films.
What do you mean?
Well, I called Kevin. Kevin's like, hey, do you know there's a Criterion sale on? Do you know anything about these films? He starts naming movies.
And he's seen them all. He's given me
And I've seen
reviews.
Them all. Yeah. And I'm like, Kevin, no, you don't want that one. And then he's like, what about this one? I'm like, yeah, watch the trailer for that one. He's like, oh, this looks pretty good. I'll buy this.
Yeah. $5. Well, can't go wrong. So I picked up A Hard Day's Night, which I already had anyway. But and I picked up Quadrophenia, and I already had the disc of that. But I figured it's easier just to watch it on the go.
What player just happened?
Just get bitten.
Little bumblebee?
No, I think I did something to my arm the exact same time I did to my knee, but I didn't notice it till today.
So the player, Robert Altman. I picked up M. Fritz Lang. Stalker, which is a Russian movie that Simon recommended, and then two Jacques Tati films. Mon Oncle and Playtime.
Oh, I've been Tarty's Playtime. I've been I just never get to it. I always forget to write it down. I really want to see that movie.
Have you seen Mon Uncle?
No, because I keep meaning to send you $100 so you can get me the Tartee box sets, like $200. And I wish I could go to Buffalo and buy it. Like, I just want to buy it so I have this on my shelf.
And then
I'll get to it one day.
Another $5 special, Solomon Kane.
That's not Criterion, is it?
Not Criterion, no. And not good. And then a new release, which I had on DVD in French, but I've now got the English dubbed version of Brotherhood of the Wolf. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie.
We did it on the show.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I love that movie.
You made us do it.
Yeah.
Or can I finally say the magic
and I
words?
Also, no. I also bought Justice League Unlimited, the complete set, for $10.
I went to go find my copy of The Ray just to show Simon that I do have it on DVD.
I want that. You can send that to me.
No.
So if they make it...
Kevin sparkles because of his monitors.
And we are out
I asked
here.
Simon for a review of it, so I bought it.
That's a good one. Okay.